I'm sure that you will recognize what I've got in my hand. I would come down beside you and give you a closer look, but I'm not sure I'd get back with them to the table. What have I got in my hand? Money. Any particular kind of money? This one, for example? £5 note. This one? £10 note. What's the main difference apart from the amount in these two pieces of paper? Colour. But what does that colour maybe tell you? It shows you how much money you go through your hands. You don't take time to look at it. Bank of Scotland note, £5. Bank of England note, £10. But both of them have some words which are the same. Can you tell me the tiny words that you never see and you've never bothered to put a magnifying glass out to look at them? What are the words that are the same on both? Give him a clap. Well done. Shows you how close he looks at his money and tells you that there is a promise being made to you. The promise, £5, £10 sterling. One is the Bank of England, one is the Bank of Scotland. Who do you think is most likely to break the promise? And the answer, you hope, is neither. But there it is, on both of them, the promise to pay the bearer £5 or £10 of sterling. And we expect that that promise will be kept. Although if you watch the news and read the newspapers, you'll know that in the last 2 or 3 weeks, the major banks and almost all the major economic currencies are just a little bit shaky. And indeed, one bank with loads of assets but lots of liabilities got sold for £1. Promises. In about 40 years of ministry now, I have asked countless hundreds of people to promise, those who are getting married, those who are having children baptized, those who are being ordained or set apart, will you promise? And we hope that they will. I wonder how many of you remember on the day that you joined the church that you promised. We have to keep our promises. Two figures on these notes. One is Winston Churchill and the other is our Queen, our late Queen. And I think we would agree still that she kept the promise that she made to the nation and to the Commonwealth. Winston Churchill, not in the same situation, but he said that he had nothing to offer but blood and sweat and tears. This morning, have in your mind a gathering of people following Jesus into Jerusalem. Here was the Messiah. And the little children sang. And they waved and set out palm branches. And the city of Jerusalem welcomed Jesus of Nazareth. promises and the promise of their support disappeared inside a week. But we have this morning to remind ourselves that we still have Jesus' promise, which has been maintained down through these last 2,000 years plus. For Jesus said to his friends, "I'm going to prepare a place for you. I would not tell you this if it were not true. I go and prepare a place for you, and I will come back and take you to myself." As you sit in the pew, as I stand at the table, I believe with all my heart and mind that the promise made to us by Jesus, with God his Father's power behind him, will be kept. I suspect I'd be very surprised if you are not like me with regard to certain things. And one of the things which I find now that I've been doing for a long, long time is looking back on one's life, thinking of the big moments that might have been within it, trying hard not to remember all the things that you would rather forget. But when you think back, it is almost certain that you can remember the exact moment when you decided to do something or something happened, the beginnings. And for many of the things that have happened in your life, there has been an ending. And you can put the beginning and the ending side by side, and you can remember most of what happened in between. Most of it, I would imagine, has been good, although some of it you would probably not want to remember at all. Indeed, some people are very good at reminding you of the things that you would not want to remember at all. Memory, it's very important. And these important decisions, followed by the actions, may have been the way that we have answered a question or responded to someone's need. It might just have been an action taken the spur of the moment, or it may have been the result of long agonizing consideration and consultation. It may have been a quick emotional response to something, the result of weighing carefully all the pros and cons of a course of action. I'm not sure whether it would be of interest to anybody in the congregation this morning, and they may not have noticed, but there is a poster up on the notice board which is wondering whether you might like to have a conversation. And the conversation was someone who would help you to decide, perhaps, whether or not you had the call to ministry. You've almost got time to go through all the training before you're going to be allowed to call one, so you never know where you might go. You have to think of the pros and the cons. And even as I've been speaking, I'm sure that many of you will have brought to mind just such a moment, an event, decisions, and it may be that you would say that there was never any choice, but that surely to deny the reality of free will, which is a gift of God, all without free will, we would be like robots, mere puppets on a string, being tugged gently sometimes, more strongly at others, the pull of our heavenly controller, dancing to his tune, capable of any personal choice, maybe, but not much in many cases. There are many, many paths from one to another. In the final analysis, I think that there are only two ways of life. One, the way to death, and the other is the way to life in all its fullness. And that life in all its fullness, I believe, will end here on earth. But I believe also, as I said already this morning, that the promise of Jesus that he will have a place for us will be kept, and we will be with him and our Heavenly Father in the kingdom of heaven. But this morning, just for a moment or two, I want you to consider when did Jesus take the step that made the cross inevitable for him? At what stage did he burn his boat? Jesus was no different from us. The choice was his, and he made it. But when was the moment that he decided what he had to do, knowing full well what would the consequence be? Think of our reading this morning. Jesus had gone back across the Jordan to the place where John the Baptist had been, and he had stayed there for some time. And many people came to him, and we are told that people believed in him and in his teaching. There he was working well, and he showed every sign of successful ministry. And there the threat from the religious leaders and the Roman political leaders seemed to be far away, not coming close at all. There, it was a safe place for him to be. And then the Bible tells us a message arrived for Jesus. It was a very simple message sent by his friends, two sisters, who looked to him in their time of need. They needed him now. Their brother Lazarus was desperately ill. No one seemed to be able to help him, except as Mary and Martha knew, their friend Jesus would be able to help. And so the message, your friend is desperately ill. They saw Jesus as one who could help. Just that no demands, no suggestions as to what Jesus should do. Not saying to him how quickly or how slowly he should come, or what might be his solution to Lazarus's illness. All that they said was, he is very ill. They didn't ask him to come. They knew the danger that was there for him if he came to Jerusalem. Maybe they believed that he could use that very special power which he had to bring Lazarus back to health without him being near him, without him having to touch him. But Jesus had a choice of action. He could have rushed to Bethany. Immediately he got the message. He could have remained where he was and asked God to heal Lazarus. There was absolutely no need for him to make that journey. He could have sent a messenger with words of sympathy. He could have made it clear that his place was with all the people who had come to him, who believed in him, and he knew that there was more of such work to be done. What was one person compared to the opportunity where he was? He chose. And if you remember the reading, he chose to do nothing. For 2 days, he chose to do nothing. No action, no message sent. He stayed where he was and did nothing. I wonder how many of you have waited for 2 days for something to happen, for a letter to arrive, for a telephone call to be made, for a visitor to be at your doorstep. Have you ever sat by a bedside of someone who was very ill for 2 days when nothing seemed to be happening? Have you yourself ever suffered pain or loneliness or depression or anxiety? Have you ever been frightened by what is likely to happen to you or to anyone whom you love? When we come to our prayers this morning of thanksgiving and intercession, we're beginning week by week to think of our community and to think of all those who are in need and how they might be helped. And most of all, as we do that, we have to remember that we speak in Jesus' name. And we are to be loving and caring and able to give of our strength and our resources for all those who are in need, those who are ill, those who are lonely, those who are depressed, those who care and who work with family and friends and in employment as a carer. They need to know that we as a church community have them in our mind and in our prayers, that they should find strength and know that they are not alone. But those of us who have experienced it would be able to tell you that 2 days can seem like a lifetime when heaven and earth seem to stand still. This week, we heard of someone who was complaining bitterly about the amount of time that a relation had to wait in an ambulance outside a hospital. There have been many people in that situation in these last years. Not 2 days, but 6 hours, but knew all that was there. What was Jesus thinking about? For 2 days, nothing. And then he spoke to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." In other words, to Jerusalem. He would go to his friends. He was going in his own time, which he saw as the right time. And no doubt in these 2 days, when he was seemingly doing nothing at all about Lazarus, he would have been thinking about what would be in front of him if he went back to Jerusalem. And during these 2 days of waiting, he was able to understand what was to come. The way to glory was open, and the way would be through life to death. His disciples, when he told them that they were going back, or he was going back, they were appalled at his decision. They tried to dissuade him, for they too had a sense of what that decision would bring for them, but more importantly, for Jesus. And you can read something of their conversation in the Gospel. Jesus asks them to go with him. And you can imagine the murmuring there was. But lo and behold, it was Thomas. Thomas, who had the reputation of being a doubter, who faced up to the fact of what was the situation, and he showed his courage. "Let us go," he said, "that we may die with him." And so there was within the disciples a sense that Jesus was going to Jerusalem to die. Jesus chose carefully. He thought fully. He chose his course of action, understanding the ultimate consequence for him on earth. And for Thomas, the facer up to facts, the realist, what mattered if it meant death? They would be with Jesus, and to be with Jesus outweighed safety on earth. No one likes to think that they're putting their head in a noose. Most would choose to be safe. Oh yes, we want to be stimulated, excited. We want to be enriched by life, but within the limits of safety, without any real risks. Our life is precious to us. Our life is precious to family and friends and colleagues and to many other people. And it is the only life we will know here on earth as we are. And yet, in this time that we are here, there are times when we transcend our fears. And I would imagine that most of you who have had some experience have found your safety and your strength as you have been on your knees in prayer. And if we give it any lengthy, real thought, we will conclude the fear of death can be outweighed by the power of love. And the fact of death may be freely accepted as the cost of living. Jesus thought, decided, that he would lay down his life for his friends. And he made a promise to us: "I go to prepare a place for you. I will come back and I will take you to where I am." God's promise to us through his Son. And so in the days that are left to all of us, may we use them for Jesus' sake, and bring the love of God to those who still have to hear it or to be reminded